Strangers and Aliens, Episode 70.
Strangers and Aliens Summer Movie Series.
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Hello, welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Summer Movie Series, and I'm here with Dr. Jace.
Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Jace O'Neill, and I'm here with Ben.
Hi everyone, I'm Ben Avery, and we're not here with Steve, because he hasn't seen this movie yet. But Dr. Jace, would you care to introduce the movie that we're about to talk about?
Well, we're going to boldly go into this topic, and it is going to be a topic that is one that both Ben and I like. It is Star Trek Into Darkness.
Star Trek Into Darkness. The second in the rebooted alternate timeline series.
Yeah.
And, well, let's go ahead and get started. Just quickly for you listeners, if you've not seen the movie, don't worry. This first half is going to be spoiler-free. We are not going to ruin anything for you. Second half will be spoiler-filled. But there will be a very, very obvious point in the middle of the episode letting you know to stop listening, go watch the movie, and then come back. So let's start by grading it, Dr. Jace. What do you think? Star Trek Into Darkness, give it an A, B, C, D, or F. How do you grade this one?
I'm going to give it an A minus.
You're giving it an A minus?
I am, yes.
An A minus. That's nice. I am also going to give it an A minus.
Right.
Yeah. What were your expectations going in? Were they high, low? What were you? What were they?
Actually, they were pretty non-existent.
Really?
It's been a while. Yeah. It's surprising since it's one of my favorite franchises, if not my favorite franchise. And because I'm so busy with other things right now in my life, I have not had a chance to really keep up with it. But even when I saw articles, I tried to ignore a good portion of them, at least when the movie was starting to get reviewed. And it's been a while since the first one. So I had there's been a little bit of time in there for me to kind of wait it out. But I didn't really go in with, I did before the movie started. I kind of wondered, is this going to be better than Iron Man 3, or where is this going to fall into my list?
Your summer list?
In general, what I was comparing it to. It depends on, it could be the summer list, could be where I rank it in the Star Trek canon, that sort of thing.
Well, let's do that. I mean, I went into it with pretty high expectations because I really liked the first one, and this is J.J. Abrams, and he's learned. I mean, this isn't his first big movie. He's done a number of big budget movies, and he needs to start, showing us he's going to do a good job with Star Wars. So,
yeah,
I went in with high expectations. They didn't quite meet my expectations, but it wasn't by much. I mean, it was just a slim sliver of, it could have been better if they had done this or this, which we can talk about later.
Yeah.
But two things, Dr. Jace. I want you to rate this movie for the summer. We've seen two big blockbusters now, three if you include Oblivion, but I'm not going to. So how does this stack up as far as the summer goes so far for you?
Oh, well, this
versus Iron Man 3.
Yeah, this is definitely better than Iron Man 3, in my opinion.
And as far as your expectations for the summer, then, is this the one, were you looking forward to this? I mean,
Of all the movies, and you can remind me if there's some that I'm missing, but of all the movies that I, on my top list was originally Star Trek, Superman, and then this doesn't count for summer, but it's in my years, the Hobbit movies.
Yeah.
Because I usually pinpoint 3 to 5 movies that I have to see in the theater, because as I prefer to watch them on Netflix so I can watch them straight through if I can.
Yeah.
But then Iron Man 3, the trailer looks so good, so I added that to my list, and there's been a couple others that I've added to my list, but Star Trek was definitely, if not the number one, number two that I really had to see in the theater.
All right. So how do you feel it stacks up? I mean, how do you feel it stacks up against just the rest of the franchise, the movies especially, but in the franchise, where does this fit?
Well, for me, I guess I should ask you first, what are the big movies you have to see, and where was this on your
You mean for the summer?
Yeah, of the summer, of the movies you had to see, where did this rank of the ones you had to see?
Well, this and Man of Steel were the two that I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
So we're on par on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as where does it rank in Star Trek lore or the canon for me? Well, first of all, as you know, my favorite Star Trek movie of all of them is Star Trek First Contact.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best of all of them, in my opinion. And then I didn't think the new series would even get close, but the first Star Trek got really close to First Contact for me. I was surprised, so surprised that I enjoyed it so much. And I would have to say that this second one, and I'm just coming out of the movie, I'll probably have to watch them all straight through again to give you a more logical, thought-out, researched answer. But I just watched all of them straight through about a year ago, and I would say that this would probably rank number three. I think it's better than any of the originals.
So this is number three after First Contact and Star Trek 2009.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I have a hard time with it because it's kind of like the James Bond movies, yeah, where they're just very different.
Yeah.
I mean, the original crew movies, that's one set. And then you have the Next Generation movies, that's another set. And then you have this iteration. And man, I don't know. I really, really liked it. I'm trying to decide, do I like it as much as I enjoyed, especially Wrath of Khan? That's one of my favorites. It's hard to tell, but I do place this up there. It's up there in terms of rewatchability for me.
Let me ask you this.
Of course, it's brand new, so of course it's gonna be up there with rewatchability. But
Then let me ask you this, to give a stepping stone, where would you compare at least with the first one of this new reboot?
I feel like it's a really good continuation of the first one. I feel like they got out some of the kinks. One of the things that they did with this one that they didn't do with the first one is this one actually had a lot of thematic meat to it. There was going on that was more than just big, bright, strong, loud action.
Yeah.
Now, that was still in there, but I actually felt like they were telling a story that had some depth to it. Not necessarily as much as you'd want, especially if you're a fan of like Next Generation, where those episodes, some of them were really deep.
Yeah. I'd agree with you on that one. I thought that the first one, kind of like the first Iron Man, was just like a fun rock concert. It was fun. But this one, I felt there was a lot more deeper themes that we can talk about later.
Right.
That that a lot of the characters had to deal with.
Yeah, so and as far as acting goes, I there was a lot of this was also a much more emotional movie than the first one.
Yeah.
Lots of tears being shed, not by me, but by different actors. I mean, these guys were really performing their...
There were a lot of gasps in my movie theater.
Oh, really?
Especially when the revelation of who the villain was.
Well, and there was some gasps in my movie theater where they're like, wait, that can't happen because that's an important character, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was enjoyable. It was fun. You know, I went to a midnight show and I sat next to, I don't know who this lady was, but I'm sitting with her and she is just a tired, drunk woman. I don't know how else to explain it. She just kept, before the movie started, she just kept talking and talking and she just foul mouth. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, am I going to have to get up and move because I don't really want to, but... she did stop talking mostly, but she did at a lot of those key moments, she'd be like, what? Oh, no way. You know, I'm just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
But, it was a good audience to see it with. And they were, you know, they were there because they were ready to enjoy it. And when you heard the word space, the final frontier, there were three or four people in the audience reciting it along with the movie.
I was too. I was reciting it to my wife. You know, I
felt like it was a liturgy at a church service or something like that.
Yeah, well, some people it is that. But I surprised my wife by getting a sitter and taking everything off. I took her to the movie first thing this morning.
Oh, okay.
Because I like to go in the morning because it's a lesser of a crowd, plus it's cheaper.
Yeah, you know, I was going back and forth between midnight last night and then it would be 1 o'clock was the earliest showing I could go to today. And it came down to it. I just wanted to see it really bad, so I went ahead and went to the midnight show. So, all right. Well, let's talk this then. Before we get into spoilers, let me ask you, do you recommend this movie? And beyond that, who do you really recommend it to?
Yeah, I would recommend it. I would recommend it to Trek fans. I would recommend it to people who are 15 or 16 and older. But if they're younger than that, then it's up to their parents.
Can I just interrupt you real quick there? There were some moments in this movie, just a couple of them, but it just went that one step too far where I'm like, well, I can't really show that to my son.
Yeah, I think that they're trying to make it a little bit darker and grittier. I think that's what they're trying to do.
Well, and the violence and the sexuality.
Yeah.
So you recommend it to just about everyone then, is what you're saying?
Well, you know, if they're too young, then I would defer to their parents on what their kids are ready for. But, you know, I think it there's some really interesting discussions to be had by a family on the topics that are presented.
Mm-hmm. Well, and themes of family are all over the place in there. Themes of community.
Yeah.
Themes of terrorism. Yeah. And themes of vengeance is another big, big theme. And then also you have the whole Spock, half human, half Vulcan.
Have you seen the commercial with the two Spocks?
Yes, the car commercial.
I think it's so funny where they basically challenge each other to get to this place, and whoever, you know, beats the other person out, like, has to, you know, the other person pays for them or whatever. And it looks like, you know, Zachary Quinto is driving this brilliant, beautiful car, and he gets there in no time, sits on the steps for him, and Leonard Nimoy gets lost, and he shows up. And Zachary Quinto's like, hey, I beat you. And Leonard Nimoy goes, we're not inside yet. And he gives him the Vulcan death grip, and he just passes out on the ground. And so Leonard Nimoy just walks in. It was hilarious.
Well, and it comes down to Leonard Nimoy has to win. I mean, they're not going to let Zachary Quinto beat Leonard Nimoy. I mean, they put him in the car that's being advertised.
Yeah.
But he's still going to lose.
Yeah.
His car will win, but he will lose.
That's funny.
So... I do recommend it to most people. I will just say this. If you are a Star Trek fan, I think that there's, like with Iron Man 3, and actually there was a lot of things about this movie that reminded me of Iron Man 3, but like with Iron Man 3, there are going to be some things that might cause Star Trek fans to turn against the movie.
Well, I think it could actually either go that they absolutely love it for those same reasons.
Exactly,
Or they hate it, but I think you have to remember that's a continuation of the first movie.
Right. And I really do believe if you like the first movie, you will really enjoy this one, because it's the first movie's stuff set it up, and now you're off to the races with the second movie.
Well, that's the great thing about the way they set up the first one, is because even if things are different in this one than what we think is in the timeline, it's not like the other stuff didn't happen. This is just a different timeline.
Yeah. And well, we're not going to talk about spoilers, but it's the same characters, and that was the other thing I really appreciate about this one is character growth.
Yeah, all the characters grew a little bit.
Yeah. Except for maybe Dr. McCoy, who was just kind of grumpy at the beginning and grumpy at the end. But
that's true.
But that's Dr. McCoy. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, let's see. Is there anything else we want to say, or do we want to turn it over to spoilers?
Let's spoil the mess out of this thing.
All right, let's do it. All right, so I'm going to turn on the spoiler buffer. And we're back. You've been warned. We are going to spoil this movie. And honestly... yeah, there's some good stuff that you don't want to be spoiled. But we're going to go ahead and start it now.
Spoil.
All right.
What that means, for those of you who don't know, it means that we're going to give away things that are in the movie.
Yes.
So watch the movie first.
So go watch the movie. You've been warned. You had the spoiler buffer music. You know the drill. you want to stay away from spoilers, then you better turn it off. Go see the movie. Turn it back on. Let's talk now, Dr. Jace.
Yes.
I think we should maybe go through just some of these cool things and, or not so cool things that are the big things. One thing I wanted to ask you, did you notice the thing that they inserted in there for fans of Enterprise? The Enterprise NX-01 was one of the models.
Oh, you mean a model? Yeah, I did see that.
Was that not cool?
That was cool.
Because all of Enterprise is, Enterprise is the only part of the franchise that is unaltered by the new timeline.
That's true.
There was that ship right there in the, because captains always have models of the ships.
Yeah, and I did see that, yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
So. Okay, well, let's talk about the elephant in the room then.
Wait, did you like the homage to the original series with the furballs?
The tribbles?
Yeah, not that, but even I saw it coming from when the announcement said, "Get the whatever it is from our encounter with
Mud."
Mud, yes.
Yes,
did you hear that?
Yeah, but that was actually they were talking about the ship.
Yeah.
The ship they were taking, because the tribbles came from Cyrano Jones, not from Harry Mudd.
But where did the ship come from?
The ship came from Harry Mudd. Or, well, that's actually something I've not read the comics, but I've seen enough of the comics to know Harry Mudd's daughter is in the prequel comic to this movie. Okay. And they got that ship, I think, from interacting with her. It might have been her dad, her dad's ship. I just know that she was the Mud in the first issue of the prequel comic. So,
okay.
Yeah, they dropped a lot of things like that aren't important to the movie, but they're going to make Trek fans excited
or
angry.
You know how many of them got so upset with the flares? Do you think that the flares, how did you see that with this one?
I felt like I was just watching the same continuation of the same movie. There were still a lot of lens flares. And by the way, if you go to retconcomic.com, here's my plug for this episode. Our newest comic is actually about Star Trek Into Darkness. So,
I like the look of both movies. But anyways, what are some of the things that you really, really liked in the film?
I really, really liked the opening. James Bond opening.
Yeah.
Where it's just another adventure that really is basically setting up for us the fact that the Enterprise can go in atmosphere, setting up the character of Captain Kirk as far as, he pushes the rules.
Because in the beginning they also established the Prime Directive. What do you think about that?
Well, the Prime Directive came from Enterprise, right? Like, that was something that they were kind of talking about and throwing around during Enterprise, that series. And so I think that they really needed to set up the Prime Directive for people who aren't like me that can say, oh, the Prime Directive, I know what that is. Non-interference.
Yeah.
And the fact that I just liked it that they were exploring. It wasn't the 5-year mission, but they were exploring. They're off doing their thing, doing what they would do. They're there to observe. But, oh, the people are in danger. We're going to save them. And that's what Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock would do. And then we're going to do it as much as possible and avoid the Prime Directive. Make sure they don't see our faces, make sure they don't see our ship. And I enjoyed that first scene a lot. It set up just where are we going with this movie, but also gave us a nice little unrelated adventure.
Yeah.
So what about you? What's one thing that you really enjoyed about this movie?
I really liked that all the characters pretty much progressed, but you're right. I think that Bones probably progressed the least, but I felt like, there were opportunities, like obviously Kirk and Spock had a lot of time to growth and change. And then Simon Pegg, he had his moral stand and Sulu got his chance in the chair. And then Chekhov got to be for a period of time, got to be the head engineer, the chief engineer. So I thought it was really cool how each of the characters progressed.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that they weren't stagnant from the first movie, and they've grown slightly after the first movie to this movie. And then in this movie, especially Kirk and Spock, just kind of going through that, hey, we're gonna learn from this. These adventures do have weight to them. They're not just, hey, rah-rah rock concert, but
yeah,
there's actually something to it. So
I also really like the interaction between Kirk and the bad guy, which I'll now reveal is Khan.
Yes, Khan. Which, how early did you pick that up?
I didn't listen to any of the last thing I read was that people were debating who the bad guy was.
Uh-huh.
But when they started to talk about, you know, the, you know, basically the altered, when was it? I'm trying to remember that there was a time when I go, ooh, I think it might be Khan. I don't remember now.
Early on, I think that they set it up nicely, you know, even when he revealed it, it was an emotional revelation. But early on, toward the beginning, where he's talking about, I was, you know, I'm from a bygone age, and yeah, I was created to be the best. And
yeah, that was the time when I started to kind of think, I think this might be Khan.
Yeah, yeah. I really had hoped it wouldn't be Khan, not because I didn't think they could do a good job with it. I just was hoping they'd try something a little fresher and more unexpected. I was hoping it'd be something to do with that, the barrier at the edge of the galaxy with Gary Mitchell. But then they did something with that, with the comic books, which are supposed to be like in continuity. And so it was, that's gone.
I think it's really interesting because it's the second movie. And obviously in the originals, Khan was the second movie. So timeline, it kind of makes sense.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to my friend Bill, who is an existing person, in case you're wondering, Dr. Jace, but I was talking to my friend Bill and, you know, we were talking about how this is Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock put together. And yeah, I really did have a vibe of, you know, the second, you know, that last bit where they're chasing him through the city and then they wake Kirk up. That really reminded me of that final scene of Search for Spock, where Spock comes alive. And
well, that's what I thought was, you know, I liked the switching of roles, because what happens in the movie is basically Spock and Kirk switch roles, where mm-hmm. Spock is matching wits with Khan, and it is Kirk who has to make the personal sacrifice and ends up kind of in this toxic environment where he dies. And then at some point, Spock yells out, Khan!
Yeah, they totally flipped it. And that was where, when they revealed that Khan was actually from Section 31, which, by the way, Section 31 is in this movie. I mean, that's cool. That's a cool little addition that anyone who's not a fan, they're not going to care, and they don't need to know that Section 31 was all through, you know, Deep Space Nine and Enterprise and whatever. But yeah, Section 31 is in this movie, and they reveal that Khan was a part of Section 31, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a lot like in Iron Man 3, where the Mandarin shows up. I guess I shouldn't spoil Iron Man 3, but just in case, but he's not who you were expecting him to be, and so I could just see fans turning off and saying, Khan, Section 31, no. Yeah. And then with the whole switch around with Kirk and Spock, I could see fans either really enjoying that and hearing this familiar dialogue with a different context, or a slightly different context, or a slightly different context.
Oh gosh.
And I could see fans either just turning it off and just saying, oh, forget it, turning against the movie, or really embracing it.
I think what the turning point was when Spock contacts old Spock, and old Spock kind of drops the hint, this guy is dangerous, mm-hmm. and it costs everything. That changed Spock's approach. All of a sudden, you know, so the thing is that it was different, but there was extra information that was not available the first time through.
Yeah. And, you know, the first time through, what I liked about it was that, you know, old Spock was able to come, which again, here's another huge, huge thing that I was not expecting at all. Khan, I was kind of expecting because second movie, they're talking about using a character from the previous series or whatever. But old Spock, a back, Leonard Nimoy back again. I was not expecting that at all.
No, that was cool.
And they ask, well, how do we defeat him? And they kind of left it to your imagination. They cut away from that. And I'm trying to think of, well, what did old Spock say to him? And I could just imagine him saying something like, well, you need to use his own arrogance against him.
Yeah.
Or find what it is that he cares for and use that against him. Which is both things that they did.
You know, as far as the things I liked, I thought it was a fun movie. I thought it was moving along well. But it wasn't until the shift of when they switched roles and it became apparent that Kirk was going to die that I really started to like it. And then, but I kind of felt like, oh, I'm kind of missing something. I kind of missed that one-on-one matchup. And then I got it with Spock versus Khan.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, what it did was it turned it on its head. And then I got the deeper kind of payoff to, I'm like, oh, Kirk finally got it. Kirk really is finally connecting. But then I'm kind of like, on an emotional level, this is good, but I'm kind of missing out on that fun popcorn movie where I want that guy to go mano a mano.
Yeah.
And man. And then they gave it to me.
Well, and again, this is another thing. They pull this and they reference the old series where in the final fist fight between Khan and Kirk in this episode Space Seed, Kirk wins because he uses a tool. All right, he pulls some weird thing off of a computer panel and uses that to like knock Khan out. And that's what Spock does. He grabs some weird chunk of metal off of the spaceship thing that they're on top of, and he just clocks Khan on the head with it. It's emotionally satisfying. They really hit the emotional mark with everything. And Kirk dying, that was his character arc right there. His character arc was, first of all, you have to take responsibility for the people in your command and not rely on your own dumb luck.
Yeah.
You are good, but you're cocky. You need to step back. And when he turned and said, again, Iron Man 3, he turned around and says, I'm sorry, when the other ship is about to fire.
Yeah.
That's a great moment. And then he sacrificed himself for the ship.
And the same thing for Spock. The reverse is that he was a by-the-book robot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had to think extemporaneously and go, you know what? I have to think outside of the box. What is the greater good at this point? And that growth is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It was satisfying. I liked it. I can really see where people would not, though. So. All right. Well, we've talked about things we do like. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we talk about things we maybe didn't like?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
We can move on.
Well, My one problem is there is some fast and loose storytelling going on here, and it's the same thing that happened in the first one. You know, Captain Kirk just happens to be placed on the ice planet where old Spock is in the first movie. In the first movie, it takes 2 seconds to go from Vulcan to Earth, you know, and there's no real sense of distance. And the same kind of thing happened here. There's no sense of distance between the Klingon homeworld and Earth. It's just, okay, we're going to warp and we're almost there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing was with Spock's character arc, there was one problem I had with it. And that was the whole time Spock is saying, follow the rules, follow orders, follow the rules, follow orders. And then Kirk gets orders that kind of might be against the rules. You know, because there's some serious consequences. It's, you know, up until that point, Spock was follow the rules regardless of the consequences. It might mean I die, but follow the rules because of, you know, that's what they're there for. And then all of a sudden he's, well, you shouldn't follow these ones. These orders.
I would disagree there because I think he's still following the rules. The problem is the Admiral is not following the rules. And so it's, if you look at it, just follow orders, then yes. But if you look at it on, wait a minute, this contradicts what Starfleet stands for. It's not a military operation. What our orders are completely contrary to what the rules are.
I feel like there should have been more to it, though, than just all of a sudden Spock says, well, don't do it. Don't do it. I think there needed to be some more debate about it. More, okay, this is your orders. Let's take a look at these orders. And I just feel like it was too much too quick. Huh. There's also a big, really annoying plot hole that I can get past some lots of other stuff, but the one that really bothered me was the Tribble comes alive from Khan's blood. And McCoy is right there and he's looking and he, you know, has that moment of, oh, Khan's blood. That's right. We can use that to heal Captain Kirk. And he yells, bring me the cryo chamber. And they bring the cryo chamber. And I'm thinking, oh, they're going to get out Kirk's, you know, they're going to get out one of Khan's guys and give Kirk a blood transfusion from them. And no, we're getting out the chamber so we can put Kirk in it so he won't die quick, you know, and, but we're still going to have to get Khan. Like, make sure you bring Khan in alive because we've got 72 bodies here that have the same blood, but we need Khan's. And, oh, it just bugged me. It just bugged me.
I think, you know, I could go there with you, and it crossed my mind. But the truth is, having some friends who are doctors, you can't assume that someone else's blood would have the same effect, even if they are still genetically altered. What you do know as a scientist is that Khan's blood worked. So as a scientist, you want to duplicate as much as you possibly can, because there might be factors that, and you don't he didn't have enough time to really figure it out, because it's all chemistry and, you know, how is he different than maybe some of the others, or maybe what generation? Maybe he was a different generation of super. So for me, it was very easy to dismiss because I have friends who are doctors, and they have this rote kind of mentality of duplicate and copy what you know.
Maybe, but the other thing that happened with because of this, and I can kind of go with it because, you know, Kirk has gone through his character arc. His character arc was think of the ship, think of the crew, put them first, and be willing to sacrifice yourself. Yeah. You know, which the willingness to sacrifice himself came from Spock.
Yeah.
That is, you know, that was Spock's, their friendship there. You know, Spock was willing to die, and so Kirk kind of takes that same motivation, and he's willing to die. But I just wanted Kirk in the climax. I just wanted Kirk to be there. I wanted Kirk chasing, you know, Khan down the street and jumping on buildings and stuff like that. I was okay with Spock doing it, but I was thinking, oh, they're going to give Kirk the blood from someone else, and then Kirk's going to beam down and be the one to stop Spock.
Oh, no.
You know?
No. I figured, the thing is that because I know that Kirk is like one of your favorite characters, the thing is that Spock is probably more popular than almost any character out there. So it's kind of a, you know, I think it's a crowd pleaser.
And not just more popular, but he is more powerful and more well suited to
that. That's, you know, what I liked about it. What I liked was that he was far more evenly matched physically. I thought it was cool. It was something I wasn't expecting. And so when it happened, I'm like, ooh, this is actually kind of fun. Because the truth is that, no, the next time they meet, Kirk will be able to hold his own because maybe he gets a little bit more power from the drugs or the blood.
I'll say, though, I love the scene where basically Khan beat up Kirk by just standing there and Kirk's like breaking his hands on Khan's face. And like Khan wins the fight just by standing there and taking the punches. It's like Homer Simpson when he was boxing.
Let me ask you this. Was there even a moment that you thought that Kirk would really die?
No.
Would stay dead?
No. Absolutely not. Now, there are two things with Kirk dying. One is Christopher Pine. Is that his name? Christopher?
Chris Pine.
Chris Pine, yeah. He got a better death scene for Captain Kirk than William Shatner did. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But the other thing was, I felt like this was like Iron Man 3 again, because in some ways, the defeat of the villain was taken out of the hero's hands and given to his partner.
Yeah, unfortunately for this one, instead of it being...
Spoiler for Iron Man 3.
Yeah, spoiler for Iron Man 3. Instead of it being a girlfriend who never fights who kills the bad guy, it's a guy who is more apt to kill the bad guy than the main guy.
But
and let's be honest, though. In the original series, it's Kirk and Spock, or Spock and Kirk. Mm-hmm. It's not just one or the other.
Yeah.
It's both. And if we're going to be fair about it, Spock was there first as number one.
But here's the other thing with Spock. Like I said before, Kirk sacrificing himself, that comes from Spock's example in the beginning of the movie. Spock, first of all, having emotion to go after this guy and being willing to, you know, do things that he wouldn't have normally done as a Vulcan, that comes from Kirk. I mean, these two guys, they're best friends. They don't know it yet, but they are best friends, and they are really pushing each other to be better. And they're brothers pushing each other to, you know, iron sharpening iron. And, you know, now that Kirk's father figure is gone, which, by the way, Pike's death, Pike's final words in the bar with Kirk are, "It's okay, son, it's going to be okay." And I'm just like, oh, wow, that's a real connection there.
I would say that was one of my disappointments, was that when Spock mind melded with Pike, I thought that there was a more information. Like, I thought that maybe Pike secretly thought that there was a conspiracy within Star Trek or in Starfleet.
Yeah.
And, or something. And then for Kirk, but instead it was just for Spock's character arc, which, you know,
That makes them brothers, though. I mean, Pike is Kirk's father figure. And then you have this, you know, he's not his Spock's father figure, but he's his human side father figure.
The one thing I think I didn't like was there was just too much to really flesh out. I mean, it was fun. We went to all these different places, but we really, like, I would like to have, like, I like Bones. I love the character of Bones. And I didn't feel like he was in it as much, nor did I think the movie was as funny as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think the humor was there, and it basically felt like Bones' one-liners were not very funny. And I don't think that most of the film was that funny when it was trying to be.
I feel like they were marking off two checklists. And one checklist was the people who liked the first movie but don't like Star Trek, what did they like? They like Spock and Uhura. They like speeding through space, flying with, you know, like some sort of skydiver. They like all the action. They don't like space combat. They like interpersonal combat. They, you know, and then so they're checking those all off, and then they're checking off the things for the fans on the second list. Reusing lines and referencing old lines and referencing characters and referencing places and those kind of things. I really felt like there was a checklist they were going through. And at the same time, trying to also make it an emotional movie that connects with viewers.
Well, I think it's a J.J. Abrams film. You know, I think that what he does is big popcorn type movies. I did like the Nurse Chapel comment because I thought that the blonde lady Carol was going to be Nurse Chapel. I think a lot of people thought that it was going to be Nurse Chapel, and then so when it wasn't Nurse Chapel, when it was her that kind of brought the homage, it was kind of a funny thing. In fact, she kind of was a cross between Nurse Chapel and Denise Crosby in Next Generation in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I knew she was Carol Marcus already from just all the news and press releases and stuff like that. But
I haven't read anything since the very first. And when you first saw her, you didn't know who she was. And I know the talk was that she was Nurse Chapel initially.
Oh, you mean before people knew?
Yeah,
and they're just looking at her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do one last question and then we'll wrap this up. Where do you think they go from here with this franchise, with this movie, specifically movie franchise, with the next Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Star Trek?
I think that there has to be a re-showdown with Khan, if not in the next movie, the movie after. I mean, they kept him alive for some reason. So
yeah.
I think that his bitterness is going to... I mean, he is a good bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, he could easily get out of the, you know, the cryo sleep or whatever, because... Not because he's going to, like, wake up because of sheer force of will, but because he's going to have things in place. You know, he's going to have people in place who are already under his power. That, I mean, that's what they could do. But here's the other thing. They kept dropping references to war with the Klingons as inevitable.
Oh, yeah. That has to be a part of it.
I really, yeah. I think that the next movie will be a big standoff with, if they don't go to war, then they're going to be averting the war. What can we do to make sure war doesn't happen?
I definitely think Klingons are in the future. But, you know, they're starting this new 5-year journey, so who knows what's going to happen.
Oh, I know that, too. I mean, that was really cool, too.
You know, I'll be honest. When Scotty went to go scout out those coordinates, when I first saw it, I go, what? That looks like the Borg.
Yeah, it was kind of.
I go, wait, did this alter timeline get the Borg there sooner? What?
Technically, I think the alter timeline, they get there later.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, Q wouldn't necessarily send, you know, Picard and them to the that area to alert the Borg to the humans. And then also, the Borg never went back in time to change, you know, and to assimilate the Earth before Starfleet. So
now you're making my head hurt.
I know.
But I think, you know, Ben, what I would love is for them to crank out a couple more of these movies, but at the end, give it a good ending where you get to see these characters when they're older. And I think I would love to see a passing of the torch of a made-up Chris Pine to a new Jean-Luc Picard and let J.J. Abrams do the next generation.
Yeah. I would like to see maybe two more movies with these actors. And the thing that really bugs me is that, yeah, we're waiting 4 years between movies. Of course, now Abrams going over to Star Wars, I don't know what that means. They're probably going to have to find a new director, and maybe he can do something faster or be able to work on something faster and not have to worry about so much with all the television producing and making a couple other movies, you know, Super 8 or whatever. But, yeah. All right. Well, any last words then about Star Trek Into Darkness?
No.
Okay. Well, our next episode is actually going to be kind of continuing our Star Trek discussion. We're going to be talking about, what we would like to see the franchise do if we could kind of take the franchise where we would like to take it, and how would we just run with it, with not just with this with the movies, but with the entire Star Trek universe. So we will see you then. Thanks for listening. And if you wanted to send in your thoughts about Star Trek Into Darkness, we would love to hear them, and we'd love to relate them to the rest of our listeners. So other than that, Dr. Jace?
Yes, Ben.
I'll see you later.
I'll see you in like 2 seconds.
Yep. And to everyone else, Godspeed. Thanks for listening to the Strangers and Aliens Summer Movie Series. You can email us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. That's 1-804-372-5436. We'd love to hear from you. You can also go to our website, strangersandaliens.com, leave a comment on the blog, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens. We're also on Twitter, Strange and Alien. Check us out.